This is natural football. If you're making a desperate attempt to lock the ball with your feet and your body, your hand is going to move
for
time.
You subscribe.
That's never a penalty. Never. So disappointing.
Join in the obsession. Get three free podcasts per month. Just download the Off the Ball app now.
Highly recommend it.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
A new season of the Women's Super League has kicked off, which means we are back with a brand new season of the Koigig podcast for you all to listen to. We will also obviously be following the Irish team over the next couple of months and weeks as they look to qualify for Euro 2025 next summer in Switzerland. Kathleen McNamee here, and I am joined by our ever regular, our ever dependable Captain Karen Duggan. Karen, very nice to have you back.
It's good to see you guys. How are we?
I'm having strong deja vu feelings. I mean, how many years have we been doing this now? 3, 4?
I don't know. They've all been so much fun. They all blend into one.
I know exactly that. And we're also very happy to say that coming back on the podcast this season, we have Ireland international Jamie Finn. Jamie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Thank you.
Jamie, we've seen some positive news on your Instagram over the last couple of weeks in terms of your injury compared to the last time we were chatting to you. I've seen you back out running again. How are you feeling?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, I'm 6 months post-op now. Kind of flown by in a way. But yeah, 6 months, got the boots back on, and yeah, hopefully back over to Birmingham pretty soon and get back in with the team.
That's great.
How much are you looking forward to getting back into the team and not just being by yourself, rehabbing and getting back into things?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it a lot. Like, obviously, you're part of a team, like, literally your whole life, and to do this rehab alone, it's been tough, like, but the guys up at Santry have made it really good for me. So yeah, but I'm just excited to get back into a team environment, back in with the banter.
And a team that's in form as well, which will be nice.
Yeah, exactly. That's nice to go back to, scoring goals, keeping clean sheets, and yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, we're all watching and very excited for you, especially with the sad news that we've had over the last couple of weeks that Jessu has done her ACL again, which is so unfortunate. I mean, Karen, we chatted during the international break about how much it felt like she was really hitting back into her form and how much she seemed to be enjoying her football. She was one of our main creative outlets as well. So unfortunate for her once again.
Yeah, it's devastating. You know, like you said before, the break after the last international really was looking at her, and for such a young girl, I felt like she's really taken on some of the responsibility in the attacking sense. Obviously Julianne got all the headlines the last time, but a lot of the really good play that's come in an attacking sense in a kind of structured way has come through Jessu. She's got great confidence on the ball, a brilliant dribbler, and we don't have too many players like her who can play wide and through the middle, and she had that game intelligence as well for someone so young. So I'm just devastated for her because I really felt like these were going to be massive matches for her, and she was the one that we were kind of going to be talking about in that sense. But look, she came back once and she came back in dazzling form, and we just hope that she'll be able to do the same again and hopefully have a smooth recovery. That's the main thing for her. She's so young. It's all about taking the right time now for herself, because she should have a long career ahead of her if she gets everything right from here on. But obviously from a supporter's point of view and from an Ireland point of view, we're devastated as well. But yeah, just wishing her all the best from here on out.
Jamie, is there much that you can say to people in those situations? Because I know she's been through it before, but you're the most obvious recent example in an Irish context of someone that's going through it.
Yeah, I think, like, listen, when it happened, my heart broke for her, because, like, to do it once and then to come back, and like Karen said, she was in such good form, and I was so excited to see her play and to see her perform well. So yeah, it was just so unlucky, but I think just for her, like, it takes a certain type of person to come back from an ACL. It's a really difficult injury to get. Like we were speaking there about doing everything alone, it's very difficult. But she can use that experience she's had in her first one to take into this second one and really go for it. But I have no doubt she'll be back stronger than ever again.
Yeah, and I think she's sticking in with her club as well for quite a lot of her rehab compared to you. So hopefully that being in that environment will also be a help for her. And as you say, having that past experience too. Karen, we tried to meet up with you a couple of weeks ago, you know, have a chat about the new season of Koi Gaek, and you're like, oh, sorry guys, I can't, I'm playing in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I think it's the best excuse anyone on the podcast has ever had for not being around for a recording or a chat.
Yeah, usually my excuses are much weaker than that, to be fair, so glad to have a good valid one this time. Yeah, we went away and it was the best we've probably played all season. It kind of all came together for us in that first game. And yeah, I didn't expect to be coming away disappointed that we didn't get through, based on our league form. I don't think expectations were overly high going into it, and obviously being seeded where we were seeded. But after seeing the level and seeing the way we could have played, we did come away from it disappointed. I think obviously if we had been in better league form, particularly that belief when it comes to scoring goals, I think maybe we could have gotten more out of it. Look, we would have drawn FC 20 and maybe got our arses handed to us there, but it would have been great to continue the experience because we were riddled with injuries, you know, at the start of the season, and then we made some sign-ins mid-season, and it kind of felt like it was coming together a little bit. It's just a pity that it was too late for us, but look, it's a great experience. For a lot of the girls, they have a taste for it now. They know the level that they need to get up to, and like, I probably won't get back, but I've had a couple of experiences now, and hopefully it'll make the girls hungry for more. But again, in terms of Piemont, we have a bit of building to do before we can even think about that, because we are a little bit just off the top three teams at the moment. So that's something we just have to see out the season, and use the next few weeks to get some good momentum going and see that as a building block for next season and push on from there. The only thing is, it's, you're never going to keep the squad together, especially with some of the young talent we have. God knows how long we're going to keep hold of them for. So like I say, just in terms of the season, if we were going into pre-season the way we are now, I think we'd be there, thereabouts, but it's just unfortunate the way it happened. But very proud of how everyone performed in the Champions League. I think we represented ourselves in the league quite well, so that was good.
Definitely. There was like such a nice buzz around the games at home, and people, the fact that Gigi Carter picked it up as well.
Yeah, that was brilliant. It was really, really brilliant.
It just meant that it was like really easy to watch as well, because I think I had a lot of people messaging me about the first game, about where could they find it, and there wasn't really anywhere. You were kind of just following people tweeting on X and different places like that. So the fact
I can give you a quick synopsis of it. Basically, it was too hot, too long, and it was brilliant in the end, but it was a horrific experience.
I was going to ask you how you found the heat element of things.
Horrendous. We're not built for that at all. But look, we became masters of the dark arts of time wasting and water breaks and things like that. So, you know, play the game.
Jamie Cairn probably won't give herself credit though, but it is really important, does say, to have those games on television, being able to see them, have teams performing well. Like, as I said, Cairn, I was going in with the way you were talking beforehand, thinking you were going to get absolutely hammered, and that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great representation of the league here. It's just, how do we get to that next level as a league, as the Irish League? How do we get to the standards of the other teams that the girls are playing? But that also comes with the experience that they've had playing in the Champions League. That's what it takes, the standards that they have set. But yeah, no, they've done the league really well. Yeah.
It's been too long since an Irish team has gotten out of that round of groups. Like, I think we can all acknowledge that. And having seen the Belarusian team and seen the Croatia team, in terms of talent, I don't think that there's a gulf. It all comes back to the fact that they're probably professional compared to where we are, and just that level of coaching that they're getting on a daily basis. So again, it's just a reality check, but it's also something for us to aim for as well, I guess.
Definitely. And hey, we will be here to push you on. I know you said that you may not make it back there, Karen, but at this stage, I wouldn't really
won't.
Unless we're getting some sort of official announcement about your future.
No. But even if I play next year, like, it's the end of the following season that you'd be, you know, competing in. And that's another thing, like, as well, that it's end of season compared to other people who are almost pre-season. Maybe it worked a little bit in our favour this time around. But yeah, it's just different all around the way we are compared to the professional teams who are playing in the winter leagues as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also found out at the weekend who are our cup finalists. So we have Athlone, who narrowly beat the Clyde, which I was very sad and don't really want to talk about it all that much because I actually thought they might have a vague chance. And then they'll play Shelburne. That's on October 20th in Palace Stadium. So it kind of falls at a relatively nice time in that there might be a bit of hype around the international games as well. Good opportunity to get to see some of the people that are playing on the ground here, even if it is the third straight year that we've seen these two teams play off. So not as exciting from that perspective, Jamie.
Yeah, no, I think it will be a good game. I think both teams coming into it will fancy themselves winning it. I think the cup, the FA Cup is such a, I know for me, when I played in it, it was such a special cup to play. At that stage, it was in the Aviva. So it was such a nice day out and stuff. So, but I think it'll be fairly tight, I think. Even though I would like to say Shells will hopefully
I was going to say, you're not going to... You can happily play your sides if you want. Karen has done it enough for the last couple of years where we've been like a P-Mount-only podcast. And I've had people come up to me in pubs and other places being like, we need a little bit more representation of the league on this podcast.
Well, they're not going to get it from me, so...
Yeah.
Dog on.
I'd like to think that Shells would win it. I think they have the quality to do it. But again, on a cup final day, you just don't know. You just don't know how it will go.
You don't, but I do think that the I know it's the same match we've had the last 2 years previously, but I think that shows that they have been, you know, anything can happen in the cup and you say that, but they're the consistency that those two teams have shown, I think it is the right final. I think it is gonna be the most competitive that we could have gotten out of the semi-finals, which I think overall it's a televised game. And I think it's good for the league in that way. And it'll be a good showcase for where the standard is now. Cause I think that those two teams are kind of leading the way. Obviously Galway have made massive strides this year as well, but I think that consistently and the levels that they're at and the coaching that they're getting, I think it'll be a really, really good game. I do think it'll be tight. I think we'll talk about it more, I'm sure, when it gets closer. But like Jamie said, the quality that Shells have, like, just in depth, and obviously Athlone lost Chloe Singleton more recently. So you'd be edging towards Shells, I think, but Athlone are a brilliant cup team as well. So we'll watch this space.
Watch this space, and I don't get to get excited about Sligo and something. So that's I'm writing it off already. I've no horse in this race whatsoever. Thank you very much, guys. As always, this season we will be doing our normal WSL analysis as well as little bits of chats about the league here at home and the cup, as you said. And we will also have Emma Carroll coming up very shortly with her team of the week. But do stay tuned because we have a nice little new addition to the podcast this year. And just so you know, kind of stoke up some league rivalries as well a little bit within the pod. We're adding Shamrock Rovers' voice in Scarlett Heron, who's going to be doing a tactical breakdown of one specific element from the WSL. So she will be doing how Sonia Bonpaster fared in her first game at the helm of Chelsea. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. But first up, here is Emma Carroll with her team of the week. Welcome back to the podcast. How have you been in the intervening weeks and months that you haven't had the lovely opportunity to chat to all our bright faces?
Missed you all terribly. Missed the multi-screens. They were back yesterday. So, yeah, back straight into it.
I feel like we need to get some more sincerity in this pod. You know, come on, guys. I'm trying to be like, yeah, we all like each other. We enjoy doing this.
Emma's really just like, yeah, it was bliss. It was peaceful. Leave me alone. Bring me back.
Didn't have to talk about my games of the weekend, and I enjoyed that. Emma, we'll run through your team of the week shortly, but it's nice to see the bias is starting good and early. There's a few more Liverpool faces in this than I necessarily expected to see after their performances, but I'll let you run through it and then we can discuss.
Okay. So in goal, Hannah Hampton. Then we've got Emily Fox, Gemma Bonner, and Kadina the back, as well as Katie McCabe, who was probably player of the match, I'd say, in that Arsenal game. Kim Little and Kerry Holland in the middle. Guru Wrighton, Jay-Z, Galton, and how are we going to say it? Seke? Seke?
Seke, I think, is what they were saying on the comms of the weekend. So I generally defer to the experts in these things. Yeah. Karen, you were... Oh, sorry. Continue, Emma.
Nope, that's it. Hat-trick, so she definitely gets in there.
Yeah, first ever WSL player to score a hat-trick on her debut, I think. So that's a pretty impressive performance. Karen, you were nodding your head when I mentioned the Liverpool bias, and I know Jamie has her Liverpool ties as well, so I'll go to you first.
A very red team. I know, Emma, you said you were just going to pop on for 5 minutes and have an easy run of things, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case. Look, a lot of Arsenal, Liverpool and Man United representation, very, very red. I do think Emily Fox right back, I think she's probably the most impressive American I've seen come into the league and settle as quickly as she had in a long time. But I also thought Neville back in her correct position this year, and on a, you know, we spoke about her being out of position last year, and like the previous season we had her in team of the week quite often. She kind of lost that a bit, so I think she was worth a shout. Liverpool at centre back might have gone for Parry, but I'll allow one of the Liverpool centre backs to be in, so you selected Bonner, that's grand. Obviously Katie can't really the anthem there, she was brilliant. I think maybe some of the comments from the Champions League where people were wondering if she vacates her defensive responsibilities, she took that personally. And I thought she was brilliant defensively.
Yeah,
I thought she had to be fair. And kind of on that, I guess, there's no Manchester City representation, but they did go to Arsenal and get a point, which I think is a strong start for them, but we'll say it was a good team performance.
I did think about putting Miedemann in there, and then I thought I might break Kathleen Tart even more.
That's the one I was kind of hinting at, maybe. I suppose she was taken off with a little
bit. I did kind of expect it, to be fair. I had mentally prepared myself for her to A, score, and B, probably be in team of the week. I thought it's the most impressive I've seen her play since she came back from her ACL injury, which, Jamie, you're nodding out there too. So I assume you also agree that she deserves a shout, although I can totally understand as well why you do have Sake in there.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, if you score a hat-trick on your debut, I mean, yeah, I think you deserve to be in there. And obviously against Courtney as well in Everton, like, it's not easy to score against Courtney, so to score three. So I think she deserves to be in there. But yeah, I think Miedema played really well. Probably, as you said, the best she's played since she has come back, and to go to the Emirates, your old team, and to perform like that. I think maybe she could have got a show, but then who do you take out?
Well, it was probably between her and Jay-Z, to be honest. And then I thought, you know, Minima's probably gone. Like, if she stays fit and stays in form, there's plenty of time for her to be in teams of the week.
True.
I probably might have gone for Jay-Z, but I would still pop another Man United player in there to get my bias across. I thought Clinton, obviously debut, and we spoke about her being on loan last year, and I was so afraid that Man United were going to allow her go like they have in with other people that they shouldn't have let go. I think she's going to be a huge player for Man United this year. I think she showed that the way she got in the box and the way she looked for the ball. So I think I probably would have just popped her in because of her involvement, and obviously a really good header for the goal as well. So she was really, really impressive to me. And as was Galton coming down the left, which was great. And then you have Wrighton in, and she was really good, but Canard's goal was spectacular, and it was the thing that separated the two teams. So it's kind of 50-50 there, but I'll let you off with that one.
Thanks very much.
I'm slightly afraid that Canard's going to start off where she left off last season and how good she was getting, and it felt she was only revving up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is scary for the opposition teams. But I think, you know, it wasn't like Chelsea came out and won 7-0, which, you know, always gives other teams hope. Obviously, it's too soon to say anything or to fully kind of analyse this new era that they're going into. But they stood up to Villa's challenge, and I suppose it was good that there was a Villa challenge. I suppose we were so disappointed with them last year that it was good to see. And that's why Hannah Hampton is selected in goal. She had to work really hard for that clean sheet. So she...
Great save from the opposite goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah, it was a great header, to be fair. But yeah, she is... I think, like, as the season goes on, not to channel my inner Emma Byrne here, but she could be the difference between the top teams is the standard of goalkeeping. And she, for me, she's by far the top of those.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, do Arsenal bring Van Domsler in more, or if they're going to stick with their tried and tested. I just feel like it's one area that they could really improve on. And having seen Van Domsler for the Netherlands in the Euros, admittedly it was a couple of years ago, but I do think she's the sort of player that could grow into that position quite well with the team that's around her. So that's something that I would like to see change for them. Jamie, is there any other ones that you want to point out there?
I think... we've mentioned Leah Galton. I think from playing against her, she's a nightmare to play against. Absolutely not a nightmare. She is so direct and so quick, so strong as well. So I think she deserves her place in there. Also from Man City, Lauren Hemp as well. I think her crosses into the box this year will get Man City goals. I think her assists alone and just her directness in her play and running down the wing and her crosses, whether they're pull back or into the box, I think she will be one of Man City's.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think once Miedema and Shaw get their distances and that relationship going and those runs into the box, I think that you're right, that those wide areas and those crosses into the box are going to be huge for City.
Well, Emma, thank you very much for pulling together our first team of the week of the season. Very excited to have you back on board and look forward to getting through those photos of a Saturday and Sunday of you and your multiple devices that you have up ready to watch all the games.
Actually, do you know what? On that, the match is streaming on YouTube now. Game changer.
It's brilliant.
So much easier to flick between games.
There you have it, folks. You heard it here first from Emma Carroll. Emma, thank you very much. Coming up next, we are going to turn our attention to Chelsea and Sonia Bompasser's first outing, well, first competitive outing with the side with Scarlett Heron. Now, as I said, we're going to do something a little bit new this year, and that is having Scarlett join us to do a bit of a tactical breakdown of certain teams or certain elements that she's noticed at various points of the weekend. This came from off the back of Scarlett doing some commentary on Off the Ball, both analysis and then some pre-match comms as well with me ahead of the Ireland internationals, where I was just very impressed at the things she was noticing. And you don't normally get co-commentary people who will actually sit beside you and tell you all the things that you're missing, but Scarlett was very good at that. So I reckoned, bring her on board and she can tell all the Koi Gig listeners what they're missing at the weekend too. Scarlett, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Caitlin. Very high press there.
Well,
bit
you
of
know.
Pressure now.
Oh, no, not at all. I like to build you all up and then tear you down slowly over the course of the season, as Karen knows all too well. So, you were taking a look at Sonia Bompasser's first outing as Chelsea manager. I don't think anyone really knew what to expect from her because, you know, spent a lot of her career at France before this. Emma Hayes has basically built that club from the ground up. It's her squad. So what were the things that were the elements that you noticed of this first outing? And obviously we're not going to totally judge her off her first game, but what can we look for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so obviously they won the game, inevitably. Like, it was a 1-0 win and it was probably nervy enough for them. Villa came on strong in the second half and had a good few chances from set pieces. So, as you were saying before, Hannah Hampton, well deserved in the team of the week. There was bright sparks for Chelsea, like Wrighton was running riot on the wing, as well as Kanarud as well. I thought they were both brilliant, and they're sort of the direct wingers that Bombaster had in Leon, and sort of that sort of style she likes implement. So, it was strange to see her set out in like a 4-4-2 formation. At Lyon, she typically went 4-3-3. And the main sort of difference that I noticed between sort of Emma Hayes and Sonia Bombaster in terms of their style of play is just their midfield. Hayes would sort of go off a double pivot in the sixes and then have one more attacking outlet. And with Bombaster, she sort of rather have one just sort of sitting and then allow her two attacking eights to sort of go up and down. So that box to box. But she went to 4-4-2. I'm not sure if that's because of sort of lack of attacking eights that they have. I suppose Cuthbert would probably be her your number one for that. But she sort of sat as well as Nuskin in midfield, and they played with a two in midfield. Another thing I noticed was the sort of attacking outlet that the fullbacks offered. Bombaster typically likes to play with fullbacks that will sort of overlap, underlap, and you've seen that with Lucy Bronze. Like, that was a great addition in the window and an interesting one, but she got not a lot of ball in the first half particularly, and played good balls into Baltimore, who's obviously, it was her debut for the club. She was brought in during the window from PSG, so obviously Bombaster had seen her in the French league, and I thought she was really good. She was sort of playing up top with Ramirez, but kind of dropped in a bit more deeper and was able to get on the ball, sort of turn out and then play it wide. So yeah, and then as well as Ramirez up top, sort of Bombaster loves to play with a sort of target man up front to hold the ball up, and then obviously the midfielders can bomb on and sort of offer some sort of support play. But that was an interesting sort of setup for her to play with 4-4-2. When she kind of went into Lyon and revitalised the team and changed the entire system. And I don't know if she's going to do the same here. Obviously, she's had pre-season, but it might just be the sort of the play that Aston Villa was going to bring into the game. She just wanted to play a more structured 4-4-2 formation. But there was good signs from Chelsea. As well as at the press, Bombaster, it was interesting to see on Villa's goal kicks, they were real high. The gegenpress is something that she really pushes, which is sort of the reacting as soon as you lose the ball, you're not sort of letting your team get back. And I thought they did that quite well. But I also thought that Villa played out with it really well. There was a lot of pressure on them, particularly in the middle parts of the game. I thought the last 20 minutes, obviously, Villa were pushing forward a bit more, so Chelsea like naturally dropped off a bit. But I thought they did really well, Villa, to play out from it. But you had sort of that gap. So Wrighton was pressing with Ramirez, and then Baltimore and Nuskin was pressing the two midfielders. Then there was a gap out wide where Wrighton had sort of left that fullback free, and then they were just playing to the centre-back and then kind of clipping out wide a few times, which is really smart from Villa to be able to sort of bypass that. But it showed, like, Chelsea showed good signs of intensity at times. I thought the first 20 minutes, they were probably a bit slow off the mark. Obviously, they had most of their chances. Wrighton had two brilliant chances in the opening few minutes, but I thought press-wise, they sort of let Villa have it a little bit. But I'm not sure if that was just sort of the opening, sort of getting rid of the cobwebs the first 20 minutes or so. But another thing I noticed was the set pieces. Chelsea had about three, they had a free kick about 4 minutes in, I think. And Wrighton had it just outside the D, and it was kind of prime position for a shot on target. But she actually went and she kind of clipped it back post. I think it was Nuskin then who clipped it back across for Millie Bright, and it was just a bit too far for her. And it was like, it's definitely something that Bombaster has worked on, because at Lyon last year, I think it was 21 goals they scored from set pieces, which is like bonkers numbers. Obviously, they dominated the league, but like, that's a great return, especially considering I think it was 9 goals was the next best from set pieces last year in the French league. So I think that's definitely something to look out for. There was another corner played short to Wrighton where she kind of did the same thing, clipping it back post. But sort of that second phase of play is where it's really, that's where the most goals are conceded from set plays. Obviously, because the defence maybe steps on and then you lose your marker and there's a player caught in no man's land, and all of a sudden someone's in behind you and gets a header on it or a touch on it, it's ended in the back of net. So I thought that's really interesting. I said there'll be a big emphasis on set pieces for Chelsea this year, especially as Karen mentioned, with the quality of goalkeeper will come in very important for them. As we've seen with DeAngelo, actually made some good saves as well. And then the final thing with Bombaster is her sort of faith in youth. She spoke during pre-season, I think it was after their game against Gotham. White captain came in, and she was brilliant for them all pre-season. She's only 19 years old, and she stood out in particular. She's just came in for Chelsea. She was on loan for a few years, and I think she could be that sort of attacking ace that Bombaster might be looking for. If obviously she's willing to put the faith in her, she didn't get many minutes, but I think that's something that they can look at going forward, is having her as an option in there. As well as Beaver Jones as well. She got a few minutes at the weekend, and obviously at the back end of last year, what was it, 11 goals in 17 appearances. So I think she can really, really push Chelsea on this year. If she can get a break in the team, she's only 21 or so. So I think she's a real, real attacking outlet for Chelsea. And if she's utilised correctly, could be coming big for them this year. So,
frightening the options that Chelsea have in general, whether it's experienced players like Lucy Bronze coming in or some of the younger players that you've mentioned there. Karen, what were your initial thoughts on Chelsea, having seen the new look under Sonia Bonpaster, if you can really call it new look just yet, and based off some of the stuff?
Yeah, they didn't deviate away massively where they've all of a sudden become this like massive ball playing team. We know that Chelsea are the most direct of the top teams, and I think what Scarlett pointed out there, wanting to get more attacking eights on the pitch, probably makes sense, because you probably only need one sitter at times if you are going to go long and you're looking at direct wingers. And maybe that is a statement of intent, having more direct wingers as opposed to a Lauren James. Maybe that is kind of pointing towards the style of play she wants to go for, but obviously it'll be hard to see, and you can't imagine Lauren James will be sitting on the bench for too long either, that they'll have to find a way to introduce her into the starting 11.
I mean, for the rest of our six, she could stay there.
I'm happy enough for her to chill out there, but when she's on the pitch she tends to score. So obviously it was a tight game. There wasn't a huge amount of chances, but she's the type of player who can create something from nothing. But she's also not the type of player who you're going to get doing doggies up and down the pitch. And maybe that's kind of pointed towards the way that Bonpaster is looking to play. I thought it was interesting as well, Scarlett, the way you pointed out that they seem to have quite structured set pieces. When you actually look at the team on paper now, they're quite a big team. I mean, especially you've got Ramirez, Nuskin and Bright. If you've got the three of those in the mix, they're going to cause problems, even if you just lump them in straight away. But they seem to have structure around that. And then in time, as teams get fixated on those big players and stopping them, that's when the likes of your writing could pop up with, you know, something unexpected. So I think that'll definitely be something to watch out for. I think in the women's game, particularly like in our league anyway, set pieces and like practicing new things, it tends to get overlooked a little bit. And it probably shouldn't. So if she can introduce that to Chelsea, because you're always looking at Chelsea perennial winners, like how can they take it to the next level? Maybe this is the area that they can improve on, scoring more goals from set pieces. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that as the season goes on.
Good stuff, Scarlett. Thank you very much for that. I feel like I have already learned lots about Chelsea and Sonia Bonpaster, and we will keep checking in with you as the season goes on and any developments that you might see.
Lovely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, girl.
So we've already looked at that Chelsea-Aston Villa game, so time to turn our attention to some of the other games over the weekend. And I'm going to get the heartache over with early and go straight to Arsenal versus City as one of the big games of the weekend that is going to hopefully make a difference to the race for the title, if either of these teams hope to be in it. Jamie, going into this game, did the teams perform as you expected, or were you expecting something different from them?
No, to be fair, I think both, kind of came out wanting to win the game.
You sound really excited about that. You're like, yeah.
I was very kind of intrigued to see how obviously Miedema would play in this game. Like I said previous, to come back to your old club at the Emirates. It is kind of maybe a bit of pressure on her to perform. But like I said previous, she definitely did perform. I think she got an assist as well. But yeah, 2-2 draw. I do think City had enough to win it. But listen, credit to Arsenal, got back in the game. But I think this is going to be very interesting this year. I think the league has gotten better again, which is brilliant. And I think seeing these games at a stadium like the Emirates is what we need to be seeing continuously. I mean, it's brilliant to see. And obviously, we said on the YouTube channel as well and on Sky Sports, we need to be seeing more of that for people to see the quality in the women's game. But yeah, no, 2-2 draw. I don't know if you're happy with that, are you?
It was kind of funny that there was like, what, 3-2-2 draws on Sky at the weekend between that and the Premier League. I don't know. I said this in after the two games, like the men's and the women's game. If you told me that morning that I would get 2 draws, I probably would have taken it quite happily. I was happier with the women's one after the game than I was the men's one, because the men were so much closer to getting what would have been a pretty famous result in terms of how long it's been since they won away at City. But yeah, it was just really hard watching Miedema and feeling like she had found a bit of energy. She'd found a bit of zhuzh back after being away with her ACL injury. And also, like, I don't know, there was all this stuff afterwards about the fact that Arsenal fans applauded her, but I don't think she's a villain in Arsenal fans' eyes. Like, Arsenal fans very much feel like she was not chased out of the club, but she probably should have been given another contract. So why would you then turn her into the villain in the whole thing? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, no, I think it was good for the Arsenal fans to applaud her. Like, she was part of the club for how long? She's part of the history of the club. And listen, this is part of the game. People move on, go to different clubs. But she was such an instrumental part of Arsenal and the history of Arsenal.
Yeah, it's not like she celebrated the goal either. I know she doesn't really celebrate goals as it is, but she was very respectful to the crowd that was in front of her.
Yeah, absolutely. And she seems like a genuine person as well. Like, as you said, didn't celebrate. So yeah, I think it was right for the Arsenal fans to applaud her, I think.
Yeah. Karen, do you think Man City potentially left the full 3 points behind a little bit?
I don't know. I think some of Arsenal's chances were more clear cut. I think obviously City were very, very good in possession, and I think they really pushed Arsenal at times once they got themselves into the game. It took them a little while to settle. You know, obviously, I just think they left themselves a little bit open to Arsenal, who were so quick on the counter. But I think that's going to be a feature of their play. Man City probably more of a possession-based team. Arsenal more with that kind of speed and going forward and stuff. So I think, I think on the balance of things, when you take a step back, if you're neutral, I think both teams could be happy. I think Arsenal were done out of a legitimate goal. I think that goal was onside. I don't want to see VAR introduced to the WSL, but I do think that was a point. I also think that there was potentially a foul in the lead up to the Arsenal goal that was. So on the balance of things, they did tend to balance each other out overall. City got a lot more yellow cards, which kind of shows that there was a bit of fear of the Arsenal attack, and I think rightly so. But I think City stood up to it. And the last couple of seasons, City's start has kind of stopped them from being in the driver's seat when it came to the end of the season. They seemed to hit form too late and make a run of things. So this isn't the worst result for City, particularly at the Emirates. So I don't think they'll feel like they left it behind completely.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Like, as I say, hard place to go on the first day. 40,000 plus people there, very much an Arsenal crowd. It probably wasn't.
Gareth Taylor kind of said himself in the first half he wasn't happy with kind of the instructions that they probably had. Maybe there was emotions, you know, obviously the 60,000 people and stuff, they kind of drifted away from kind of the structures that they had shown so brilliantly midweek in the Champions League. So I think when you don't hit those heights in the first half and you can still take leads, maybe against a run of player through a deflected shot, keeping yourself in the game is important, and they did that more than enough. But Arsenal just have that. They have the knack going forward. They are exciting going forward. And obviously it was Beth Mead who came up trumps, as she tends to do on the first game of the season every year.
I'd say it was a very happy household between the Meads and Miedemas. It's kind of what you can only ask for in a game like that whenever you're going up against each other. To look at some of the other games, what I want to look at, because we were chatting to Leanne Kiernan last week as our first kind of build-up podcast for the new season, and she said that there was like a lot of positivity coming out of the camp, but also there had been some talk from fans during the summer that they had expected them to maybe sign a few more players to build the squad a little bit. She even said herself it is a relatively small squad. And Jamie, it was quite a frustrating performance for Liverpool against Leicester City.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Liverpool had the chances to win the game. But again, Leicester, obviously haven't played against them as well. They're not pushovers either. And as I said, the league is getting better. But I think Liverpool will be kind of disappointed with that, having finished fourth last season. I do think they will want to sustain that or even go that bit further. But yeah, like as you were saying, with Leanne, their squad is smaller compared to the rest of the teams in the league. But they've shown that they can do it last season, finishing fourth, as I said. So, but I don't think they'll be happy with that result. But again, it's the first game of the season, so plenty to build on, I would think they would be saying this week in training.
As someone who's played against a team like Leicester, what can you do when you are going up against them if you are, say, a player or a team of Liverpool's calibre?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think, obviously, like when we were playing, there was a bit of a rivalry, Birmingham and Leicester. But yeah, I think with the likes of Liverpool, I think last year, sometimes they seem to kind of find form against the Uniteds, the Chelseas, like, and I think they maybe found it a bit difficult playing against Leicester. But yeah, listen, they dropped points, but again, like as I said, it's their first game of the season, and they can't be kind of too down on themselves.
Yeah, I just think that these are not the games that City, Arsenal, and Chelsea drop points in. You know, and that really is the difference between the top three and those that are coming after wanting to break into that. I think when they dominate possession as much as that and have as many shots but aren't clinical enough, I think they'll rue a result like that when it comes later in the season. And it's something that they'll need to address really, really quickly if they are going to follow up on what they're saying their ambitions are, which is to break into the top three.
Well, particularly when you look at their nearest rivals from last year being Manchester United and them coming out with that statement. But now, in fairness to West Ham and United in five away fixtures against them in the division, they've lost five, West Ham scored none and conceded 17 times. So 3-0 defeat might not be the most surprising, Cairn, but considering the place that United were in at the end of last season, some good performances in there. You mentioned Grace Clinton in particular as one that you were hoping would come back and show her stripes.
Yeah, obviously not like the big talking points. Obviously, Mary Earps leaving, and previously it was about Alessia Russo. But while we haven't signed maybe your massive marquee names, we've signed quite well, I think. Janssen, just in terms of just the flexibility in positions. She's obviously playing in that centre mid role, which obviously Katie Zellum did for quite some time. It's probably good to have a player like that in the squad, so that was a decent sign. And then I think Turland is, or she didn't score at the weekend, I think she's as good a finisher as Man United have had, even when Russo is around. I think Turland has that knack, and that's really rare, and it's something that Man United absolutely needed, something that they did not have last season. So I think she'll be big, and then it'll just be interesting to see how the rest of the squad kind of fit around. Obviously Letizia, I think she did really well captaining the squad. Like, she's very young, like, still to be coming out Old Trafford captain side. I think she's going to continue to grow into that role, so that's good. And yeah, Gabby George getting back on the pitch as well. She had a long injury stint. I'm a big fan of Miyazawa, so it was good to see her. And then the ever reliable Rachel Williams came on as well. So there's options. They're not, obviously, I still don't see the depth that your Chelseas have, but it was a really positive performance to kind of kickstart. Obviously, there's a lot of emotions surrounding it. Ella Toon having recently lost her father. So delighted for them to put in a performance for her. And also, like you say, just not to do what Liverpool did and potential banana skin on the first game of the season against a team that you would be expecting to beat. I hope this isn't a sign of things to come from West Ham. Obviously, mm-hmm. they got themselves dragged into a relegation battle that they really shouldn't have based on their quality last year. But not a fantastic start for them.
No, not the best. Although, as I say, not entirely to be unexpected either, considering their record against them. Elsewhere, we had 2-4-0 wins. So a very unfortunate drubbing for Everton. Jamie, as you said earlier, it's rare that you see four goals go in past someone like Courtney. Concern for Everton at this early stage, in the sense that, you know, they lost Galli, what looks like to be a fairly serious injury. They were already looking a little bit unsteady towards the end of last season. Brighton we haven't seen perform in the most consistently, but they seem to have bought really cleverly during the summer window and might finally, well, I feel like I say this at the start of every season, that they might try and finally find some consistency and live up to the expectations that we've had for them, but then it doesn't always go through. But Wash, what went wrong for Everton at the weekend?
Yeah, I think watching Everton, I think they were kind of, they wanted to play out from the back no matter what. And I think, well, the first goal was, yeah, got given away. It was their own kind of mistakes, own wrongdoings. And I think, yeah, I don't know, are they kind of like, don't want to change their style of play, whether, no matter who they're playing, I don't know. I don't know if that's their manager saying. I don't know, because they always seem to want to play out from the back. And I mean, that's all well and good, but if a team is high pressing you and they've scored a goal against you by giving the ball away, you need to adapt your play. So I don't know. Everton, like as you said, didn't do great come the end of the season either, and having lost the player that they've lost, it's a difficult one. And obviously for Courtney as well, conceding 4 goals is, yeah, it's not really great for your confidence. But again, I think on the other hand of that, I think Brighton played really well. I think that's the best I've seen them play, yeah, in a good while. But as you said, they recruited really well. But I also thought in that they recruited so many new players and they let so many go. Sometimes that can be a bit of a, difficult to adapt then. And then to come out in the first game of the season and win 4-0. It's a good, really good start for Brighton. Difficult for Everton, but on the other hand, I think Brighton played really well.
Yeah, they definitely deserve their credit. And of course, there was those goals that were very, very impressive. Karen, last we had Crystal Palace not making too good a start to their time in the WSL, 4-0 loss to Tottenham. But looks like Kaylee Razzo could have been a very good signing for Spurs during the summer.
Brilliant signing, yeah. Probably, I didn't expect it. I thought she would have gone to warmer climates or a higher ranked team, perhaps. But yeah, she should have possibly been in for a shout for team of the week there as well. Just brings something different to them as well. Just a pace of play and a cleverness that maybe they were a little bit lacking last year, because Spurs were kind of that team that you didn't know what to expect from them. And you spoke about consistency that Brighton lacked, and it's kind of the same for Spurs. They weren't challenged defensively really too much, and that's kind of where they've been found wanting last year. So we'll see if they've settled in a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, welcome to the WSL. This takes time, I guess, to adapt, and you're coming into a team that was able to sign Razzo compared to maybe some of the signings that Palace were able to make. It's very difficult. It's always very difficult to compete. But looking at Spurs, you'd be looking at them as maybe one of the teams you could nick something off, but it wasn't to be. Spurs came out absolutely firing. And without getting into it too early, you're now, Crystal Palace need to be starting to look at the likes of Everton and West Ham and being like, okay, can we drag them into this battle? Because I think Jamie is right, the likes of Everton, I think they might need a little dose of reality when it comes to that playing out from the back. A lot of times they were caught last season as well, just silly goals against higher opposition. I remember a goal against City, they just shouldn't have been playing out like that. So that's something they need to address, and maybe an opportunity for someone like Crystal Palace. But yeah, it's going to be tough. It has been for everyone who's come up in recent years. Jamie will know well, like, they need to get themselves into a battle like Birmingham did with Leicester and see it out. But based on early signs, it could be those kind of three teams.
We'll take a positive note from that game is that Abby Larkin did get on the pitch and played a good, I think she got on just after the hour mark, so 30-ish minutes, which is great, because we saw last season that she struggled a little bit to get some minutes. So from an Irish perspective, that's a positive for Crystal Palace, and I'm sure Crystal Palace are celebrating along with us. No, I'm joking. Guys, thank you very much for coming back on the podcast. Delightful, as always, to chat to you both, and I hope you have a very nice week. We will be back again next week with more WSL action for you. And do stay tuned, because we're going to be doing lots of interesting new stuff this season. We're all really excited about it. Obviously, we're very much hoping that there's going to be Euros at the end of all this as well. So we will be having all the coverage from Georgia and then that second round playoff game, should we get over the hill, which we are assuming that we should be able to do in a couple of weeks' time, all going well. And the Corking Gate Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to Republic of Ireland women's national team. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. You can tweet us at the Corking Gate Pod on Twitter/X. We're always active on there. Always want to hear your questions. If you're watching a game and you think, hey, that person should be in Team of the Week, then do get it into us and we will read it out on the podcast. But for now, thank you very much for listening and we will see you all next week.
The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.